morning. Counselor Rudy.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. Please. Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, Justices. I'm Jim Bickerton, together with Scott Sykey, for the plaintiff appellant, Nuuanu Valley Association, the members of which, many of which, are here in court today. I'd like to start this morning by reserving, first of all, indicating I will reserve, or hope to reserve, if I'm fortunate, 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal. And I'd like to begin the discussion by describing generally the area that we're talking about. This is actually an area that virtually everyone who lives on this island is familiar with, because as you drive up the Pali, we all look over to our right and we see that dramatic hillside covered in forest, many places very steep, often very rainy. The steepness of the slope in this area that we're discussing today is averaging 50%, and I will in a moment, I've taken the liberty of bringing to court an enlargement of an exhibit that is in the record. The map that we'll be looking at today is in the record at volume 7, page 173, and it is a drawing number 3 or figure number 3 to the drainage report submitted by the developer. And well, I have the ability also to enlarge it because I understand that it may be difficult for the court to see from where it's seated. When you have a very steep slope and lots of rain, you have two big concerns. You have rock slides and you have drainage. Where is all that water going to go? What's going to happen to the natural land, the natural rock formations when you disturb it? This is land that has sat undisturbed for 100,000 years or more. We are now about to go in, and in fact it has already commenced to begin grading and eventually paving much of this area, completely altering the natural drainage of this area, which for many, many centuries has drained down the side through the gullies and down into Nuuanu Stream. This is therefore not a case where the plaintiffs are coming before you and saying our viewplanes are disturbed or this development develops too much density or there's too much noise. This reaches fundamental questions of safety. And people need to feel safe and to be safe in their homes. This is not a hypothetical concern. The very first piece of paper that the plaintiff filed in this case was its motion for temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction. Exhibit 27 to that is very educational. It's a news report, but it summarizes all of the instances of rock slides and boulder falls that have happened in the last decade or so. And just within this valley, not very far, about within a mile of this area that we're looking at, a person was killed in their home by a boulder coming down from this very same side of the valley. 2 years later, there was another close call. That's also recounted in the article. This is not just a hypothetical concern of the people in this valley alone. It's an island-wide problem. We didn't need much reminder last week in the newspaper. There was a story that in Aina Haina area or New Valley area, there was another boulder that came down onto somebody's property. So we have a situation where the city is responsible for giving the green light or not to give the green light to these kinds of projects. And we have a situation where we can see from the historical record that their record is not perfect. And that's one big reason why the citizens of this valley want to have their say, want to have their own eyes on these documents, and want to have their contribution to what's going on. We have a development here that is over 40 acres. And when you look at to orient you to this map, the right-hand side would be towards Kailua. The left-hand side is towards town. So the lower part of it would be the eastern wall of the valley. And if you go up the map, you're heading west towards the Kalihi Valley direction. The slopes that we're talking about, if I may just use this instead, so I don't have to leave the microphone. The slopes that we're talking about are shown here. This is a map. The original is a scale of 1 inch to 100 feet. Now, obviously, this is a blow-up, so it doesn't translate directly, but If you look generally at those lower areas where the contours are spaced quite widely, those are typically slopes of about 20%. In other words, those contour lines are 5 feet apart, and you go every five contour lines or so, that's about 100 feet. So you've got a 20% slope in that area. I have a pointer, so I'd be talking about this area over here. And so we see as we get up to the development, which is marked, if you look at this dark line on the exhibit that we're talking about, is the lower boundary, the edge of this development. So everything above this would be at the bottom part of the map, and this is the whole development. It's very large. You'll see that each of these lots is 6.2 acres, 2.549 acres, 1.65, and so forth. This is an area that's zoned R10, which means that you can put four homes on each acre. In theory, when you have 40 acres, you're talking about a fair number of homes. Now, there may be other laws and regulations down the road that may prevent it reaching the full density, but theoretically that's possible. We do not know how many homes are presently intended to be put on these nine or so lots that are being developed. This project, 40 acres, with all of these lots on this 50% slope in one of the rainiest areas of the island, has never had any kind of environmental review of any kind. And there are two laws that protect our citizens in this type of situation. One of them directly addresses the environmental review question. One of them gives them the access to the materials that allows them to participate in the environmental review process. Both of these laws were misinterpreted and misapplied by the circuit court and by the city itself in this case. I'd like to talk first and reverse the order that we had in our brief and talk first about the environmental statute, the HEPA, or Hawaii Environmental Protection Act. The basic decision that the lower court made was to say that there is no use of city or state lands here, and therefore there is no trigger. And the court did this in the face of two, I think, very clear decisions by this court. One was the Citizens case, and one was the Kahana Valley case. And the court essentially distinguished those two cases to arrive at the conclusion that those cases do not control here. Basically, what the court said below was that, yes, I know that you are going to be using the drainage system that lies below. And by that, for example, we mean, if you look up here, this street that we see here is Pu'upaka Drive, and this circle is the end of it. This is where it currently ends, on this little bar here. And so the developer proposes to extend it a little bit and build this cul-de-sac here. And then these square boxes that you see here are retention basins, and there are a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, at least 8 retention basins. These are presumably horizontal, but they're being cut into some very steep slopes.
So who owns Pu'upaka Drive?
Pu'upaka Drive is a city street. It's owned by the city and county. It's dedicated, and as are all of the streets below. The basic fact here is that your water cannot leave this development and get to where it's supposed to go, which is Nu'uanu Stream, without passing through a very complicated and long-standing series of culverts, well-designed, in most instances, city streets that have proper drainage, that have channels and gutters, and that have box culverts where the water goes down underneath and into pipes and then under the city street and then out to a culvert. That network has been in place a very long time. It was built by whoever developed this subdivision back in the 20s or the 30s.
Mr. Bickerton, what is the specific use you contend brings this project within the requirement of an environmental assessment?
Thank you, Justice Sokoba. I was just getting to that. The use is that they are using the existing city drainage system to drain all the water from their property. Now, that's exactly what was happening in the Kahana Valley case.
You said in your brief that there was going to be some digging under one of the streets.
Or we believe, Your Honor, that to get to this, it's interesting. This is going to be a these roads are dedicated to the county. We have a bit of a chicken and egg problem. Where the digging is taking place, as we understand it, is along here, which is going to be, at present, it's on private property, but it's, as you see, it's right across Pu'upaka, which is going to be a dedicated property. But
It's going to be dedicated. It's not county property.
It currently, this portion, again, Your Honor, starting right where this pointer is at this bar, this is, as I understand it, everything west of that is currently Pu'upaka Street. It's a city street. This last portion here that I'm circling, just this bit here, is the new extension that's being built on what is currently the developer's property and will be dedicated.
Is a dedication a condition to development?
I cannot answer that question. It's just the state of the record is that it's been represented that it's going to be dedicated.
So this new drainage system is being extended. Well, you talk about the extension of Pu'upaka Drive.
Yes.
Okay. What is the extension? What are you talking about?
This line that I'm highlighting is the beginning of the extension. As I travel down this map, this portion here is the extension. Above that line, that's the existing street. In other words, the city street ends currently where that line is.
So the new drainage system or any part of it extends into the Pu'upaka Drive, which is private property now?
This portion of it does, Your Honor. But the point that we're making, that's just part of it. We do say in the brief that there will be digging, and one of the problems that we had, and we'll get to this hopefully we'll have time today, is that we did not have this map or this drainage report when we filed suit because of the violation of 92F. In other words, you can't even tell as a citizen whether or not city land is going to be used because they won't show you the plan. They won't show you the report that says where the drainage is. But I would urge the court to look beyond the question of where this particular facility, this particular pipe is. This ends here. You can see this is a very steep drop-off. It's a cliff. Basically, what they're doing is taking the water from these three retention basins, putting it into this drainage, which is on the land that they currently own, but which will cross the city street. But let's assume that that's still not on, that they're still not using any government land yet. They then just dump it off this cliff where it flows down. These are undisputedly city-owned culverts. And that's exactly what the situation we had in Kahana Valley. And so what they're doing is they're taking advantage of the existing infrastructure below this project to pour their water down into the city culverts. And the distinction is, but we don't have to dig under any city property to do that. So what the circuit court is telling developers is, look, you can get around Kahana Valley. You don't have to worry about Kahana Valley if you just dump your water on the surface and let it drain onto the city street. Not all of the water will run through this course down this culvert. A lot of it will run right down Pu'upaka Drive as well, which has its little box culverts and existing drainage system. The point is,
is the land over which this water will flow state land or government land?
Most of this land in this area is private property, but this area, this line I'm highlighting here is a city street, and these are two city-owned culverts under its street. As you can see, and the way that if you can interpret these kinds of maps, you'll see that this is obviously a gorge. So naturally, water flows in this direction. This culvert here picks up the flow from this gorge. This is also a gorge, although less narrow and steep. And the water that flows down from here flows through this culvert and then continues on its path. These are private homes and properties on either side of the street. But it's going through, the only way that it can get through, that water gets through from the upper slope down to the stream, is through these city-owned culverts.
Forgive my ignorance, Mr. Bickerton, but just to assist me in orienting myself, where is New Uanu Stream? Is that visible on that portion of the map?
It is not visible on this map at all, and it's not even visible on the larger map, but it would be to the west of all of this. In other words, typically, as you know, a stream in each valley flows down more or less the middle of the floor. That's why we have the valley, because it was carved by the stream. And then the sides of the valley flow towards the center of the valley. The water flows towards the center of the valley. So in this picture, for example, you're looking at Pu'upaka Drive here, and it runs up, and my pointer on the card exhibit by Mr. Psyche would be equivalent to where the pointer is on this blow-up. And so you can sort of see it in a larger scale. These are all city streets. Here is Kahawalu Drive. Here is Pu'upaka Drive. Here is Ka'ohinani Street, where the two culverts are. And this area has to get its water to the west, all the way down, all of the drainage. Over here we have these other... I was focusing only on the Pu'upaka Drive drainage basins, but we have other drainage basins. Basically, this whole area has to drain through an existing subdivision, which consists of city-owned property in the form of its streets and culverts. So,
Bickerton, excuse me, the city says, well, assuming that its use of state or county land, that exemptions apply. What's your response to that?
Our response is it's crystal clear in the chapter 11200-8 and in the city's own statement of exemptions that the exemptions are for individual single units, small uses. Nobody wants to have an environmental assessment every time a single home wants to hook up to the sewer or to the city drainage system. And so that's why we have that exemption. But it's very clear that it's not for a project involving 9 separate lots, each of which is capable of being built to a density of R10.
Is the question of dedication established in the record, or is that something that is in question of fact?
I regret that I'm not prepared to answer that question. I did not view this the ultimate question of whether... I do believe that there is in the record, and I can't cite it to you, that the developer intends to dedicate the extensions of the city streets. I'm not sure how it could be otherwise. When you have a public street and it's not gated on the end of it, it ends up being open to the public. Whether it's formally dedicated or not, I do not know. But I do not believe the case turns on dedication simply because we suggest that the teaching of Kahana Valley is you're going to use the city system. And if I may, I think that the key language comes right out of it's a plain statutory reading issue, because there are 3 or 4 different ways in which you are triggering environmental assessments. The other ones say any development within land that is within the SMA or within land that is in the conservation district. It specifically uses the term within. But when you get to the state and county lands, the term within is not in there. It just says any use of. Now, statutory construction tells me that if you're going to use a different formulation, you must mean something more than you've got to be physically building upon that land. We suggest use of means precisely what happened in Kahana Valley, which is people using the city drainage system. That's an existing drainage system that's owned by the city, and it is clearly going to be used by this development. And if the triggering point is, gee, are you going to physically put your tunnel underneath the city street to reach the culvert, or are you just going to dump your water on the surface and let it run down to the culvert? I suspect that we'll see a lot of developers just dumping their water out onto the surface. And I don't believe that that is a principal distinction that you can make between this case and Kahana Valley.
Mr. Bickerton, the circuit court judge indicated that there was, he found no use of state or county property, essentially.
Yes.
And he looked at the Kahana case and other cases which indicated use means over or under, across.
Actually, Your Honor, I think that that was the way he construed it. But if one reads Kahana, it says...
I understand what you're saying. My question is, if we find that there is over or under usage, such as when you talk about dedicating the property of Huapaka Drive, and if it is county property then, and the cul-de-sac, drainage system is over or under, and it would certainly be that, there would be no problem here, right, in terms of finding use.
Certainly, that is true.
Okay. Now, there's one aspect I'm confused about, usage of easements. If the easements belong to the county, and I understand there's a drainage pipe through one of the which will cross an easement or utilize an easement to one of the basins. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Whose easement is that?
The city owns the easements for drainage. The city has drainage easements over private property, and they've built their drainage facilities, in some cases, as I understand it, with easements. In other cases, they own it. For example, the culverts under the road, I believe the city owns those. So it's a complicated system that consists in part of directly owned property and easements.
So why is that not use?
I believe that it is use.
County property, if it's an easement and there's pipes that are utilizing those easements.
I'm not sure that I understand. I think that what the... There are easements that are being given, I believe, by the developer to the city as on its property. In other words, there's easements. This map indicates easements for drainage purposes that are on their property. If the developer owns that property already, the easement has to be in favor of someone else. So presumably it's in favor of the city. But we don't have... That hasn't reached the point where there's been any conveyance or deed created. In other words, it's simply indicated on a drainage map. It says easement, and that's all we know at this point.
To clarify it for myself, the easements are being utilized in part for the new drainage system.
Yes.
How do you deal with footnote 8 in Citizens where the court said the potential use of the highway didn't come within the EA exemption?
I think that the use of that referred to people coming and going from the development. In other words, the access by the public. That's not a use by the developer. The developer himself isn't, he's just developing the land and selling the lots.
The city tried to draw an analogy between that statement and the fact that, and your argument that, the use of the drainage system is a use falling within the EA. And the city says, well, based on that footnote in Citizens, it's not a use falling under the EA requirement.
I think the short answer is that Citizens itself cited and relied upon Kahana Sunset and didn't overrule it in any way, and distinguished, and it said if you're going to use the drainage system, that is a use. If you're going to be going on the highway to travel, that's not a use of that the developer is making of the public land. I mean, if we spread this too far, obviously, everything becomes, ultimately, we can't breathe without using some government land at some level, at some point. But we think this is a direct connection, similar to Kahana Valley, not really distinguishable on any ground of principle. that you are going to be taking advantage of an existing drainage infrastructure that the city owns, collecting all your water in these drainage basins and then dumping it down into that system, and that's how you're going to drain your property. We suggest that is a use of county lands. And all we ask, we're not saying that this can never be done. We're saying this must be done by the proper process, and there must be an environmental assessment. And if we start saying, well, if you dig under the road, or only if you don't tunnel, because that seems to be the distinction that the circuit judge made, then we are not creating any distinction that makes any sense. I would respectfully ask that if I have any time left, I reserve it for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Don Kitaoka, Deputy Corporation Counsel. Along with me today in court is Lori Sunakota, also a Deputy Corporation Counsel, on behalf of the defendants. I'm here today, Your Honors, to try to impress upon this court that what I need to do is to convince this court that the process needs to be preserved. And when I speak about the process, I'm speaking about the subdivision process, and I'm also speaking about the process by which the city conducts its affairs with developers and their consultants, such as allowing developers and their consultants to submit drafts of their reports in order for the city to comment on them to facilitate a give and take between the city and the developers' consultants before actually finally accepting a report. But since Mr. Bickerton has focused on the environmental aspects of the HEPA law, I'd like to address that. In addressing the preservation of the subdivision process, I think I need to do an overview of the grand scheme of land use approvals, which includes subdivision. As this court well knows, there's a gamut of land use approvals that run from the very 100% discretionary all the way to the ministerial, because this court has ruled several times on the state zoning, such as land use reclassifications, where a discretionary approval is usually given at the commencement of a development. So there's state land use classification, there's city approvals, which are guided by a general plan, development plan, regional plans, and then there's zoning. Each of these developments go from more discretionary to more ministerial. After zoning, there comes discretionary approvals such as special management area permits, conditional use permits, shoreline setback permits. As we go towards from the discretionary to the ministerial, we find subdivision. And basically, subdivision is basically ministerial in nature. If subdivision is approved, then we get to grading permits and building permits, which are purely ministerial. And the reason that I'm pointing this out, Your Honors, is because in this case, this development has gone far beyond the discretionary approvals. Zoning was granted in this case more than 50 years ago. Zoning was residential. In 1969, the Comprehensive Zoning Code showed that this property was residential. This zoning was challenged by the community before this court. And in 1981, this court upheld the zoning for a 58-lot subdivision. Through the succession of ownership, the present developer is now proposing a 9-lot subdivision. And as this court has mentioned many times, the environmental assessment of such developments should be done at the earliest practicable time. And the earliest practicable time is usually when these discretionary approvals are granted. So zoning has been there forever, 60 years or more. If an EA is required for every subdivision because of utility or road connections, just merely utility or road connections, that would cause subdivision gridlock and would wreak havoc with the orderly subdivision approval process. because that would require even a two-lot subdivision for a family. Trying to divide their lot into two for family purposes. If they hook up to the city road, if they hook up to the city sewer, if they hook up to the city drainage system, Mr. Bickerton would argue that that would trigger the EA compliance and Chapter 343. We submit, Your Honor, that...
Excuse me, Mr. Kitaoka. If the hookup in this case doesn't come within an exemption, then would the EA apply, EA requirement apply?
As the court found, as the circuit court found below, Your Honor, this is not really a case of an exemption, because I don't want to go through the supervisory analysis of
exemption. Your brief makes that argument. So are you abandoning that argument?
Not abandoning it. It is argued in the alternative, Your Honor. Arguendo in the alternative, if in fact this court finds that there is a use of city or state lands, then we submit that an exemption applies.
With all due respect, though, if you say there is an exemption, then that's your position, right?
It is
now
our
you're
position.
Saying there's no exemption?
No.
Exemption doesn't apply?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the primary analysis in this case is whether state or city county lands have been used. A secondary analysis is if you find that.
I understand that. So, assuming arguendo, we find that there is use. I'm speaking only for myself, obviously, and I haven't decided. But is it your position that this subdivision would fall within an exemption?
Yes, it is our position that this subdivision would fall into the exemptions, and those exemptions were specifically set forth in the lower court below. And what
the term small in the exemption mean?
Small?
Yeah, I think the exemptions use the term small. I don't have
right. I'll read for the court's benefit the exemption that we're relying upon. It is in HAR subsection 11-200-8, subsection 3D. Subsection 3 states, construction and location of single new small facilities or structures and the alteration and modification of the same. That's the first thing. The second thing is installation of new small equipment and facilities and the alteration and modification of the same, including but not limited to. And subsection D under that says water, sewage, electrical, gas, telephone, or other essential public utility services extension to serve such structures or facilities. The reason I read that in full, Your Honors, is because it has been contemplated by the Environmental Council that hookups to utilities certainly cannot constitute a trigger to Chapter 343. And when we deal with such words as small.
For purposes of the exemption that you just, or exemptions that you just read from, is it, in your view, hookup to sewers that is small, or does small modify the action or the development at issue?
Small is actually referring to the nature of the hookup. Like if there isn't a development within county lands, for instance, where there needs to be, say for a roadway, that you need to expand the roadway, that's not small. If you have a driveway to a roadway, that's small. For a hookup to drainage, if you have a pipe leading to an existing structure, that's small. If you develop a whole new drainage system that would involve hooking up or otherwise expanding public facilities, that's not small. So with respect to small, Your Honors, I would submit that anything that is to facilitate a hookup to state or county facilities cannot conceivably trigger Chapter 343 because everything hooks up to state and county facilities.
Didn't Kahana Sunset involve the hookup to an existing sewer or drainage system?
What Kahana Sunset stands for, Your Honor, is that there was a facility that ran over across under state or city roadways. And so in Kahana, there was a hookup to a drainage culvert which was under a city or state roadway. And therefore, when we deal with cases like Kahana and citizens, it is always considered by this court to be use if you, in fact, go upon city and state property and or state property and use the property. And using the property means developing something in it or developing an improvement in it. If it is just to facilitate a hookup to these facilities, that cannot conceivably be considered a use because everything hooks up, Your Honors. Every project, no matter how small, a two-lot subdivision will need to hook up into state or county infrastructure.
Will there be construction under that roadway? I forget the name of it, Pool Paka.
There is no evidence of any construction that would, in fact, commence that would be in a city or state roadway. All it is when you build a house, for instance, and you need to hook up your sewer lateral, you will need to hook up the sewer lateral to the city infrastructure. That kind of actions, Your Honor, cannot be considered Chapter 343 material.
I guess my question was, is there going to be digging under the extension of that street in order to facilitate the drainage system?
As far as extensions are concerned, Your Honor, and you got into whether these extensions will be dedicated, there's no evidence that they will be dedicated or they're not dedicated. There's miles and miles of private roadways in this colony, Your Honor.
So, my question clear. Is there going to be digging under Pu'upu'uka?
No. There's no evidence in the record to show that there will be digging under...
No evidence in the record.
No evidence in the record.
So is that a question of fact?
It is not indeed a question of fact because the court specifically found and plaintiffs specifically moved for summary judgment alleging that there were no material genuine issues of fact. Therefore, the fact record is closed, Your Honor. With respect to whether there will be use of city or county lands, there's been no establishment of any use of city and county lands, digging, improving, or otherwise.
What about the theory advanced by Mr. Bickerton that depositing the drainage from this how many acre lot or how many acre subdivision, 48 acre, is use of city or state facilities?
Once again, it's as if you were hooking up to a roadway. And Your Honor put it concisely when we did cite to that footnote in Citizens, which says it's obvious that the use of the roadway leading to the subdivision is not a use of state or city county lands. In fact, it was dismissed summarily, that concept. And therefore, that concept of whether, in fact, water which is hooking up into the city facilities triggers 343 is the same kind of concept that should be dismissed summarily.
And I'm still confused about the use of city easements or roads dedicated to the city. You say they are that extension that portion of the Pu'upu'uka Drive that leaves the boundary of city owned that forms a cul-de-sac.
Right.
That, you say, is not, you don't know if it's going to be dedicated or not.
I don't know, Your Honor.
It's not a condition precedent.
Not to my knowledge.
And the easements that we talked about, these are not county easements?
If there are, in fact, city easements that run over this property, it's for the benefit of the city to provide drainage. As far as this project's drainage, there's no use of easement. The only easements that plaintiffs cite to is a hiking easement or a hiking use easement that is in favor of the state. There's no easements that these plaintiffs have cited to that the city is either going to be interfered with or otherwise used that would constitute a use of city lands.
When we talk about this basin 6 and 7 connect to the Pu'apaka drainage system via a drain pipe.
Right.
That's through an easement area.
No. It is a drain pipe that runs from the detention basins eventually to hook up with the city's drainage infrastructure. See, all of the assessments, and as your honors well know, the subdivision process is a very complex one, in that when a subdivision application comes in, it is referred to every conceivable agency that would have an interest in it, Board of Water Supply, and there's a drainage division or section or branch of the subdivision which would get into the civil engineering of capacities, drainage capacities, because subdivision must ensure that there is adequate infrastructure to service the subdivision. Otherwise, the subdivision would not be approved. Therefore, I don't profess to be an engineer, and I don't believe that Mr. Bickerton can profess that he's an engineer, but there are expert engineers on these very subjects to in fact analyze whether there is sufficient drainage capacity, whereas there is sufficient sewer capacity, whether there's sufficient roadway capacity, traffic analysis, drainage analysis, and sewer analysis.
Are any of these maps in evidence or part of the record?
There were a few maps that were made part of the record, Your Honor. And
do those maps show a connection under Pu'apuka Street to the drainage system?
Well, I believe the plaintiff's exhibit here shows that the drainage infrastructure that is planned to be done. And basically,
and the map shows that there will be a drainage system either over the road or under the road or above the road. According to the map.
To the road, Your Honor. That's
or
what we submit.
Road.
In fact, if you're going to look at drainage system.
And so would you have to dig or do construction for that purpose?
There has to be construction to hook up. There's construction to hook up anything. There's construction to hook up your sewer lateral to the city system. When you build
any of
the
construction pass over state or county land or easements?
I guess it depends on whether you figure a few inches or a foot of construction to hook it up into a city facility constitutes a use. I don't know how extensive it is, Your Honor, except to say that these kinds of incidental hookups, which may go a foot, 5 feet, I don't know,
so
a limited amount into city roadway in order to hook up, then I will concede to Your Honor that there is a hookup and that it needs to connect. Otherwise, you will not have a smooth connection between the drainage infrastructure on the property and the city infrastructure that's on city property.
So based on the maps or what's in the record, there will be construction through, under, or over the road, which I assume will be dedicated.
I submit not, Your Honor. I would say that there is construction to the facility.
So if the
facility is right on the property line, then I would say then that there's no through, over, or under city road. Because if the facility is right at the property line, all that needs to be done is to hook up to it. As in any project, if there's
where's a... the property line with respect to the road?
Property line in respect to the road is wherever there is no road right now. The property line should be right adjacent to the roadway. It's like your property line or any other homeowner's property line that abuts the roadway. There is a place where the property stops and the city property begins. And that's no different here. Now, whether in fact there be a dedication, There are always dedications that may happen in subdivisions, but those are not triggers to subdivisions.
Map shows an extension of the existing roadway and the construction of a cul-de-sac. Would the inference be that there would be dedication?
Would there be an inference?
Yes, from the map.
I would say that would be a speculation rather than an inference.
Is that a question of fact, whether there will be or not?
Whether there will be a dedication, I think that it would be speculation even if it were in the fact finder's hands, because that's a matter that occurs in the future. If there's lots of subdivisions that occurred in which there was no dedication when their dedication was expected.
When the reports are returned to the experts working for the developer, do you, as Mr. Bickerton alleges, still retain administrative control over the records in the sense that comments made by the city would have to be responded to, and those documents or similar documents returned to the city for inspection?
Well, first of all, I would say that in this case, plaintiffs got all of that and got it directly from the developer. But with respect to whether...
They got it after filing the lawsuit?
They got it after filing the lawsuit. But with respect to those drainage reports with expert reports, they received it before. As soon as the reports were accepted by the city, they were made available to the public. So they were made available to the public before the lawsuit. With respect to the drafts with comments on them, they were never made available by the city, because the city believes that those kind of commentaries are just an accommodation to the developer so that they don't have to just submit a final product and have it rejected. There's dialogue. There's dialogue that the city staff, it's not city policymakers, the city staff is putting their input, free input, and their ideas for the developers, consultants to consider, not to be used against the city staff to say, well, how come you said this before? It's the free exchange of that kind of information which facilitates the processing of the subdivision, and that free exchange of information should not be thwarted in any way by premature disclosure or disclosure of those kinds of comments. Otherwise, they would not happen.
So are you saying that DPP is in compliance with its own rules because it does maintain a copy of the application?
Absolutely. The application and the maps and the subdivision submittals that are made by, in fact, the developer are public record. They are, in fact, disseminated to the public if the public asks for it. The only issues that are in question are these drafts that are going back and forth between developer consultants. And the only two drafts that were considered in this case was a drainage report and a geotechnical report. And those drainage report and the geotechnical report were in the process of, in fact, this free exchange of ideas between city staff and developers' consultants that had, in fact, these comments that the city put on these drafts for the consideration of the consultants. Those are the only two documents that are in issue. Every other document in the file was made public, including the application.
About a free exchange of ideas. The comments that are made on the diagrams and the reports, are those, do they reflect questions or problems that the city might have with the development?
It would be pretty much unlimited that the city staff would say, well, what does this mean? Can you address this? Can you look at this?
When you say free exchange of ideas, does the developer then submit something that is only privy to the members of DPP?
Well, the developer will try to submit then a final version, hoping that it accepted by DPP as being part of the subdivision application.
And will so that then be open, available to the public?
As soon as it's accepted, Your Honor, it's so immediate. And in fact, in this case, as soon as that report is accepted by the city and made part of the subdivision file, it's made available to the public.
So the
and that happened in this case.
It's not necessarily a free exchange of ideas you're talking about. You're talking about the comments of city and county employees regarding an application that plaintiffs don't have access to.
Yes, it would be comments by the city, not on the application, but on these consultant reports that are expected to come in. And in this case, it was a drainage report and a geotechnical report. And as soon as those reports came in and the city accepted them, it became public record. It's just that those comments should not be chilled, because those comments can be a free exchange where it allows the city to put its ideas into for the developer's consideration. It not necessarily binding. It's can you look at this? Can you fix this? Can you show this?
Are copies of those documents retained by DPP in their file?
There are no copies. It's basically writing on the.
I'm a copy freak. if I make comments, and on someone else's work product, and return their work product to them with my comments on them, I keep a copy. Now, that doesn't mean everybody keeps a copy. What's the state of the record with respect to DPP practice in that regard?
The state of the record basically is that in this particular case, the city made comments on the reports and returned them to the developer. Now, whether in fact some city planners make copies, I don't know. But in this particular case, the record is clear that it was returned to the developers, and then the developers in turn turned them over because they didn't have a problem with turning over. We had a problem with the city with turning over city comments, but developer didn't have a problem, so the developer gave it to the plaintiffs. So they had everything. Now, with respect to maps and other things and the subdivision application itself, that was always public. So make no mistake about it. The entire subdivision process file was made public
and
for the plan.
Technical report, the drainage and the geotechnical reports also were public.
As soon as they were accepted by the city, as soon as they were accepted, the drafts that went back and forth were not made public. But the report that came in after those drafts were exchanged and the city accepted as being okay, we accept your geotechnical report. As the day that it was accepted, it was notified that the public had access to it.
So are you saying that a permit application does not include the drainage and the geotechnical report?
They come in, the application is basically, I want to divide my lot into 9 lots. And so here's my application, here's my map showing how I want to divide it up. And then there's various reviews that go on in the subdivision process. And in fact, I believe that there is in the record a subdivision guide that the city provided for the court. And that would be at the record at volume 80, page 100, or page 22. I think, volume 80, page 22, which would basically be a pamphlet, basically, on how the subdivision process works. So there's various submittals that the city requires to be submitted by the developer, but it's an ongoing thing. And then when there's tentative approval, then the city would say, well, submit your construction plans now. Or if there's slope stability concerns, or there's drainage concerns, then the city will say, well, submit to us a geotechnical report. We want a full geotechnical report, because in a two-lot subdivision on flat land, there probably is no need for a geotechnical report.
So the reports kept on coming in draft form, then your people would make comments and send it back. Both the draft and the comments were not available to the public. Is that
with respect to the geotechnical report and the drainage report, it was an accommodation to developer, basically, and this is how the city makes its, that's why I want to protect the process, makes its process available to the public, is to say, look, so that you don't have to waste your time and then send in something that we don't like and we reject, why don't you run it by us, basically. So they run it by us, and the city looks at it, comments on it, and has free comments on it, just ideas, and why don't you address this point, or why don't you look at this effect, and then returns it to the developer for their consideration. Whether they listen to the comments or not is up to them.
And but you don't keep a copy of the drafts, is that correct?
That is the draft that is returned with the comments. And those things were returned, as the record shows, and then the developer turned it over to the plaintiffs. My time is way up, but I'd like to at least have some time for developer's attorney to make their case. So if there aren't any questions, then I'll defer to Mr. Rosen.
May it please the court, David Rosen for Appellee Intervenor La Maca LLC. It's an honor to be able to argue in front of this court, and it's my first time doing so, so I'm not quite sure how much time I have, but I'll try and be very brief. The record below has been established, and both sides have, in their respective motions for summary judgment, admitted that there are no material disputes of fact as to the issues to be decided. Plaintiffs, in fact, were the ones that initiated the filing of a motion for summary judgment. And so as we come before the court today, that is the record. There are no material disputes of fact that any of the parties have asserted. Mr. Bickerton was not...
Does the record indicate there's going to be construction under Pu'opuka Road?
I don't know that that is or is not reflected in the record, Your Honor. And I think that if that was a material issue in the minds of the plaintiffs, that was an issue that they should have raised below. Mr. Bickerton has raised a lot of issues today in front of this court that were not...
Did folks file a motion for summary judgment also?
We actually sought summary judgment in response to plaintiffs. My client did not file its own motion for summary judgment. But as part of doing so, we did stipulate that there were no material disputes of fact.
So there is going to be construction, as reflected in the record or on the maps, under the road?
Your Honor, the technicalities of what is going to occur...
Not necessary technicalities, because both sides refer to Kahana and Citizens, which contain those similar facts.
Well, thank you for raising Kahana, Your Honor, because the discussion that has revolved around that case, I think, has diverted from what really happened in Kahana. Kahana, as a starting point, again, we're dealing with a 9-lot subdivision. Kahana involved 312 multifamily units and didn't involve a mere hookup. What it involved was installation of an entirely new 36-inch drainage line under a city street, which then connected to an existing 24-inch culvert beneath a city highway. I'm reading from plaintiff's opening brief in this case at page 30. That's the way they've described Kahana. They haven't said that Kahana involved simply hooking up a project to an existing system. They admit in their own briefs that what was at issue in Kahana was the creation of a new drainage system. We don't have that here. We have a subdivision that, when it was originally zoned, anticipated development of my client's property. It was constructed so that that development could occur, so that there would be capability within that infrastructure for additional development. This court considered that issue back in the 80s. This court, the same entities that brought the instant case brought that prior case, the residents. They could have raised those issues back in 1980, 1979, when the case originated before the trial court. They didn't do so. Kahana is distinguishable because we're not trying to expand the existing infrastructure. All we're trying to do is hook into it. It's no different, Your Honor, than if my condominium association...
Anyone disagrees that you have the right to put a subdivision up there. The only question is, based on the recent approval of these plans, whether an EA is required.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that if the court is going to read the term use of government lands as encompassing a hookup into existing infrastructure, then when every little association decides to increase their electrical capability from the 1960s when the development was first created, and that necessitates the electric company going under a county road to connect into existing electrical lines, or when an association decides that it wants to add natural gas for environmental reasons and it needs to connect under a county road, every single time that that happens, it would then trigger the EA requirement. That is not a use as far as our understanding is concerned under the EA statute. The use that we're talking about, again, is right now when it rains in Nu'uanu, water lands on the Lamaka property and it runs over the property onto many of the owners below's property. It runs over city streets and it goes into the culverts and drainage system. All we're doing is redirecting the water so that instead of running over the owner's property, it now goes directly into the culverts and the drainage system. This is not a use of county lands. The water's going there right now as we speak. All we're doing is redirecting it. And we're not asking for any expansion of the system. We're not going to be creating a greater demand on the system. That demand already exists. So as far as the use is concerned under Kahana, under Sierra Club, under the North Kohala cases, all of those cases involve much bigger projects. So the exemption that the court was discussing a little bit earlier would not have applied. But we're not arguing that the exemption even applies. We're saying that there's been no use of county lands here. All we're doing is utilizing the existing infrastructure, and instead of allowing the water to run where it is now into that infrastructure, we're directing it in different ways that's actually going to be more beneficial for the plaintiffs and the neighbors. There was also a statement made by, many statements made by Mr. Bickerton regarding there being no environmental review of this development to date. Mr. Kitoka already has alluded to this, but there's been extensive review of the subdivision request. We've had experts provide geotechnical and drainage reports. We had to go before DLNR where we presented information on the cultural attributes of the property. And this is a matter of record. I'm not speculating as Mr. Bickerton is, and I'm not arguing outside of the record. These things were all presented. And Your Honors, we as the developer had no obligation to share anything with the community. We were never asked by the community for any of this information in the decades that preceded this subdivision. But as soon as that request was made, we opened up our records. We provided them with everything that we had. The county's comments on our documents that we had, the drafts, the final reports, all of that was provided to the plaintiffs. And the trial court said that after their review, they made comments to the city that the trial court found as a matter of law and as a matter of fact, that the city took and gave due consideration, an extensive consideration to the plaintiff's concerns and forced my client to address them, which we did. So we've gone through a process. The community has not been cut out of the process. They have been involved. They've involved the city council, the mayor's office, members of the legislature. And we've addressed all of those concerns. As a developer, we're not trying to do anything new. All we're asking is that we be given some finality so that we can go ahead and develop this property as it was intended back in the 1940s. As these plaintiffs knew it would be in the 1940s, and as they knew it would be in the late 1970s when they sued and brought a case before this court seeking to prevent development and lost. We've had over 30 years now since then. I think that my client, which is only trying to improve the property, where there's been no indication that there's going to be any harm caused except innuendo and speculation, should be allowed to go ahead with some assurance that as it proceeds through the subdivision process, it isn't going to have continuing community lawsuits and efforts to forestall the development. Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Bickerton have?
Your Honor, I will try to address this in 4 minutes, although we did deviate a little bit from the normal procedure with Mr. Rosen's presentation. I would like to read to you from the record at volume 6, page 33. This is page 4 of the drainage report. And I think it's important to understand this drainage report was accepted on April 20, 2006. That's a month after we filed the suit. At the time we filed the suit and had to come in and seek a preliminary injunction under the HEPA, we didn't have this information because it was concealed and withheld from us. The city knew what this was going to be, and they had been talking about it for a very long time with the developer in a private conversation. The reason that it's important that you have access earlier than a month after you have to file suit is that less than 3 weeks after that, on May 16, or approximately 3 weeks after that, the city granted the preliminary subdivision approval. In essence, the process by which the city figures out what it can accept and what it's ultimately going to give its stamp of approval to takes place over many months. What they then do at the last minute, they say, okay, we now approve these reports and the public can look at them. 3 weeks later, game's over. The whole subdivision has been approved. And as this court probably knows from other cases, when preliminary approval is granted, many rights attach and vest at that point. Essentially, the developer has approval as long as he meets the various conditions that are stated in the preliminary approval.
Do you know from the copies of the reports that you received how long the city contemplated the drainage reports and the geotechnical reports before the time between the initial submission of the drafts to the time that they granted preliminary approval? About how long was that?
It's a little complicated because this application came in only in November or late October of 2005, and then we're talking now about the spring of 2006, so we're talking approximately 6 months on this application. But they were taking over a prior application. It got a new number in November of 2005, but they were using the same consultants and the same basic reports that were flowing back and forth. So actually, it goes back more than a year, at least in the case, I think, of the geotech. I'm afraid I don't recall which one it was, but it was either the geotechnical or drainage. It was certainly being batted back and forth for a year before this. And the public gets to see it 3 weeks before it's too late. But let me, if I may, just read this because I only have a few minutes from page 4. This is in evidence. And by the way, I think the suggestion by Judge Acoba has to be followed up, which is that they didn't present any evidence that there would be no digging. I mean, they've got up here and said, no, that's not the issue. The court wanted to decide this as a matter of law, that it doesn't really matter. They can't get summary judgment if they don't present their evidence that there will be no digging. If the state of the record is there's no evidence one way or the other, then summary judgment should not have been granted to them. But reading the page 4 of the drainage report, it says, detention basins numbers 6, 7, and 8 discharges at the bottom of the property via the proposed extension of Pu'upaka Drive. Basin number 6 and 7 connects to the Pu'upaka Drive drainage system via a drainage pipe with a drainage easement through lot 3. In addition to the drain pipe, and these easements that they're talking about are still within the property. As I read this, it appears they're easements in favor of the various lots within the property. But then it gets to the boundary of the property, and I'll address that in a minute. In addition to the drain pipe, the easement will also have an open ditch to serve as an overflow from the basins. This easement will be through Lot 3 in favor of Lot 4. See Figure 3 for the identification of easement C for drainage purposes. Basin number 8's outlet pipe connects directly to the Pu'upaka Drive drainage system. Pu'upaka Drive's drainage system, and they may be, it's unclear, it's ambiguous, but they may be referring to only the extension, that last piece that they're going to build, when they talk about this drainage system. But then they say, Pu'upaka Drive's drainage system then discharges through the existing 30-inch drain line at the bottom of the subject property. That's what they're doing. This whole configuration of these drainage basins, pipes, channels, comes out onto this bottom portion of their property where they're extending the street into that bottom portion. And from there, at that point, it connects to the city's existing 30-inch drain line.
So is what you've just described, Mr. Bickerton, your understanding of what Mr. Kitaoka has characterized as a hookup?
I don't know. A hookup is not a legal term of art. I'm not even sure if that's used in the exemptions. But I would say this with respect to his point. I think it is a hookup. You're attaching to the city land facility. This is city property. It's city land.
That's what I thought he meant by hookup.
Yes, you're attaching yourself.
It's not a term of art.
But you're not just physically attaching. You are using it. You're pouring all your water down it. And that's really why it's so important. He started talking about within, within, within. If we look at all the other...
All such attachments are uses.
I believe that they are exempted if they're small, if the uses are small. In other words, the development is small. And that's what I wanted to address, the horrendous reasoning that they gave you about every subdivision, every time anybody wants to cut their property in half. That is precisely what's exempted. When you cut your property in half, you already have one house on it. You're adding one lot or one house when you subdivide in two. That's expressly exempted.
Mr. Bickerton, what is small to you? Is a condo association then? Well, this has how many lots? Nine? How many lots does that have?
These are nine very large multi-acre lots.
So what is your definition of small then?
Well, I don't have a definition. It has to be divined from the context, but it's certainly in the if I may. It says the construction and location of single new small facilities or structures. And then it says, including but not limited to, and that always helps you to get a frame of reference for what single, small, new means. Single family residences less than 3,500 square feet, not in conjunction with the building of two or more such units, or multi-unit structures designed for not more than four dwelling units, if not in conjunction with the building of two or more structures. I think that perhaps answers your question. It's not strictly a definition in the sense that the rules say this is what it means. But by giving examples, I think they're giving a sense of what it means. And it means, we suggest, that these horrible fears that Mr. Kitaoka tries to scare you with, that every average person who wants to put an ohana home by subdividing their lot is going to be stuck doing an EA, is wrong. That's simply not going to happen. But where you have multiple units, you are going to have to do an EA if you are hooking up, as Justice Levinson has characterized it, or we say if you are using the county drainage system. And it just makes sense. If you're going to have a large use of a county system, do an environmental assessment. We're not actually asking for that much. If you look at what they're having to do to develop this property and to grade all of that and to build all this and to extend streets, to ask for an environmental assessment isn't very much. What is it about this project that we should give it a pass from that? What magic is there?
Let me ask you a question about this drainage system, which discharges through the 30-inch drain at the bottom of the property?
Yes.
That you referred to. There's some indication that that lies within an easement.
I don't read it that way, Your Honor, and perhaps that would be a question of fact, drawing the inference most in favor of us. When they say, they use the word, the existing 30-inch drain line. Now, bear in mind, this is in a drainage report that's being issued before, theoretically, before there's been any approval even of a subdivision or any kind of construction work. That means it's the one that's already there. It's the city-owned. The inference has to be that that's the city 30-inch line that presently exists.
What the statement indicates, that it's within an easement in favor of the city and county of Honolulu.
I'm sorry,
Volume 6 at 33. But give me an idea as to what your understanding is when you talk about this 30-inch pipe. Is a connection as a result of digging to reach the pipe, or what? How does this work up?
We don't know. We don't have the ability to find out until after we filed suit, because we don't even get this drainage report, and this is all we have. It says it discharges through the 30-inch drain line. If that 30-inch drain line is underground, I can't imagine how you get to it without digging. If it has an opening at the surface, then they're not digging, but we don't know. We do know that they're going to be going and discharging through an existing 30-inch drain line.
Thank all counsel. This matter will be taken under advisement.
Thomas,